Are you a speech language pathologist or occupational therapist who is feeling the squeeze of high caseloads and limited support? Wondering if maybe private practice is the answer? Well, let's talk about it. Join me for a free training on May 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern, where we will explore what it really takes to leave the schools and start your own private practice in 2024. We're talking about the ability to have a flexible schedule, choose your own clients, create your own caseload cap, and uncap your earning potential by leaving salary ladders and scales behind so that you can finally earn what you're worth. Join me for a free training on May 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern, where we will explore what it really takes to leave the schools and start your own private practice in 2024. We're talking about the ability to have a flexible schedule, choose your own clients, create your own caseload cap, and uncap your earning potential by leaving salary ladders and scales behind so that you can finally earn what you're worth. Don't just dream about having better work-life balance. Make it your reality by starting your own private practice. To register, just head on over to privatepracticetraining.com right now and sign up, and I'll see you there. Megan Arnold is a speech language pathologist with an adult and geriatric focused private practice in Tyler, Texas. She began her career working in skilled nursing facilities and home health and quickly realized the need for more care for people in her area. This prompted Megan to start her own private practice in 2020. I got to know Megan during her time in the Start Your Private Practice program, and it has been so exciting to watch her grow into an amazing, amazing and successful private practitioner. In this episode, she talks about how being passionate about your niche and patient population is key for success and shares a ton of amazing and actionable marketing strategies. If you're interested in learning about how to market to physicians and specialists, this is a must-listen episode, so stay tuned. I'm Jenna Castro-Casbon, speech-language pathologist, business coach, and creator of the Start Your Private Practice system. And I'm on a mission to turn stuck SLPs into successful private practitioners. If you're tired of dealing with high productivity requirements, high caseload sizes, and low pay, it's time to take control of your professional, personal, and financial life and finally get the freedom, flexibility, and financial abundance that you deserve by working with private clients in your own practice. Join me here each week as I share tips, best practices, and inspirational interviews on the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. If you're a private practitioner or one in the making, you're in the right place, so let's get started. All right, so before we dive in, can you please share your name, your location, and the name of your private practice?
Yes, I am Megan Arnold. My practice is speech, swallowing, and neurological rehabilitation. We are located in Tyler, Texas, and we're just having a good time.
I love that so much. So we actually got to know each other years ago. You joined the START program in 2019, right? And so a lot has happened since then. But what I'd love to go into first is, how did you kind of get started, like, in your career? And at what point did you start thinking about private practice?
Absolutely. So upon graduating, private practice was never in my horizon. You could not have bet me any amount of money I would be sitting here having this conversation with you and being a practice owner. I graduated from the University of Texas in Austin and then moved to Tyler, which is a respectively rural area compared, but it is still the biggest medical hub between Dallas, Texas and Shreveport, Louisiana. And I began working in a skilled nursing facility for my CF, didn't love it, but loved the adults. So I moved into home health. In home health, I worked for a staffing company full-time, and they held contracts with all of the local home health companies, which meant on a pretty normal week, I was working for between 10 and 15 companies because there are so few SLPs hanging out in East Texas. It became pretty apparent that there was a very large need for continued care. You know, these people were getting a lot of care in home health. And then in 2020, outside of COVID happening, we actually had pretty big changes to the way that Medicare was going to reimburse home health services. So PDPM and PDGM came into play. drastically changed how we could treat in terms of frequency visit and how long or how many cert periods we could see somebody. And all of a sudden we were playing this game with PT or OT where they'd be like, okay, take a break for 60 days and then come back and see them. Well, that's not functional. So in 2019, I did come across a couple different things on social media, like start your private practice. I was like, well, quite honestly, you made it seem pretty easy. Like I can follow some instructions. You know, I can get this going. And my original goal was, okay, I'll start a mobile fees company. Let that build a little bit. Do it on the side. Stay in home health. And then go private practice. Have that be a piece of equipment we utilize and, you know, serve our patients with. That equipment arrived in January of 2020. Yep. And then every single skilled nursing facility in a vicinity anywhere near me shut down. And, you know, the world changed. I continued working in home health. And then probably about the beginning of 2021, I was like, okay, I can see patients on the side. And so I did, you know, as Assembly was no longer homebound, Assembly was no longer requiring home health services. We didn't need nursing. We didn't need PT. I had already gone through all of the accrediting process with Medicare. I had already done all the legal steps to do that. And so I started seeing patients casually on the side. I also was very blessed because in February of 21, I had my first baby and decided, okay, after I had this baby, I'll come back from maternity leave. I'll work part-time in home health and I'll build my private practice. So I actually got a brick and mortar office. And about 5 months postpartum was surprised with the most lovely blessing that I was pregnant again. So I did have a little bit of analysis paralysis. I was like, I can't fully commit to private practice. So I continued to do both. I stayed part-time in home health and I saw my patients in office on the side, which was a wild scramble. And you know, I was very blessed with healthy pregnancies, but you just don't feel great and you're already running the way you are. So in May of 22, I had my second baby. And that's when I said, okay, let's really see what we can do from a private practice standpoint. I took about a month off for maternity leave. I jumped back in and stayed doing both home health and private practice until December of 22. And then 2023, I've been exclusively private practice. We were lucky enough that, and we treat, I think I've said this, but we are exclusively treating the adult and geriatric populations. So I'm incredibly passionate about providing evidence-based, person-centered care. I'm hugely passionate also about treating the head and neck cancer population, which we aren't doing a super job as an entire scope treating, you know, unless you're highly specialized, unless we're flying to conferences, unless we're, you know, seeking aggressively specific education or you have the opportunity to be somewhere like MD Anderson, probably are not serving that population the way we should be. And that really, again, starts with our radiation oncologists and our medical oncologists being aware of what it is we do and how we help. So something I have done as a crazy person in private practice is a ton of physician education. And in COVID, that was hard. So we did like the virtual lunch and learns or the snack and learns, and I would drop off snacks like ahead of time in the morning in my mask and then go home and virtually see how many nurses I could bother and how many physicians who, you know, very few would spend their time and get on and be like, okay, lovely to see you. Like, okay, thanks. You know, enjoy your snacks. It's a business. And I never thought I would be in sales, right? Like, yeah, you have to sell your services, especially to people who may not realize that they need them, right? Like, it's easy to sell something that people know that they need, even if it's something that, I don't mean to say silly, like getting your nails done or something, but like if it's something obvious, like people know that they need that. But the unfortunate thing about our profession, and this is the same for OT also, is that people don't necessarily know what we do. And so not only do you have to, you know, sell, but the good thing about the way you've described this is that you're like selling, air quotes, through education, right? Oh, absolutely. Yes. And not only that, because there are so few of us here, it's a problem we hope, you know, fixes itself long term in terms of, you know, different programs coming to the area or more speech paths just getting here. It's just a hugely, hugely substantial challenge when we've not been providing the standard of care to start with. And this is our stroke population, our Parkinson's population. When people haven't been utilizing a proactive way to treat, you know, if we're waiting until something is so bad, we can't ignore it. Don't get me wrong, we're helpful, but if we, you know, have something like a head and neck cancer diagnosis, if we get something like a Parkinson's, we have a ton of control in how proactive we can be and then how we mitigate long-term functional change. How do we convince a physician of that early on who hasn't had a relationship with a speech therapist prior to? And it honestly, the only way I've found to do it is bugging the heck out of them regularly.
From a place of love and care, right? Like,
oh, totally.
Right? It's like, you know, you care so deeply. I mean, I'm assuming, but this is how we all are, right? Like, you care so deeply about the clients that you serve, right? And you know that they're either going without services or receiving subpar services or should have gotten services years ago. So pediatric friends, it annoys the heck out of you when, you know, pediatricians want to do the wait and see approach. Right. So really what Megan is saying is that that's the same thing happens for adult focused people, too, where either doctors want to wait and see or y'all, they don't even know what they're looking for to say, let's wait and see.
1,000%. I could not agree with you more. And that's really where the sales aspect of this has totally changed, or how I've totally changed in terms of how we're selling it. You know, people will talk about an elevator pitch. I can get in front of a physician, and if you give me 30 seconds, I can tell you specifically how I can help your Parkinson's patients and when they should be seeing me. Now, the problem is I have to get in front of them. And that has, after COVID especially, been a huge challenge. You know what? Catering a physician lunch is sometimes helpful, but if you never see the physician, making a relationship with a medical assistant or with their RNs is super helpful as well. But, you know, can I just sneak in and bring you breakfast? Is a brochure super helpful? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Now, at the end of the day, our patients end up doing a ton of work for us. They go in and they're better. We love that. You know, they go in and they say, hey, this made a difference. But then how do we generalize that for the physicians as well? You know, not just this one patient. We can address and treat all of these other things. You know, dementia and Alzheimer's are a big one right now, too. Because your primary practice physician will look at you and say, oh, that's, you're just getting old. No, that's not it. And so again, if our job as medical professionals, and I feel pretty strongly, we are a part of the multidisciplinary team. It doesn't matter what patient we're treating. I see so much value in our physical therapist partners, our occupational therapist partners. I love a social worker. I love a social worker for our adult and aging populations when it comes to finding things like additional respite care, coordinating with, you know, any kind of additional in-home care agency. I think we're hugely underutilizing that as private practice owners, if I'm honest. How can we, I mean, they've been some of my best referral sources in general, if I'm honest. My social worker contact has been hugely helpful in terms of getting patients to us for functional and meaningful therapy. And then we get the doctor. We send our plan of care over and we're like, hey, we're doing this. And they're like, what do you mean? Let me bring you lunch.
I think that's interesting for people to think about. And, you know, listeners, as you're listening to this, we put a lot of weight on marketing to physicians, right? And I think that is important, right? That would, you know, Megan's business wouldn't be where it was now, I'm assuming, if that wasn't happening. But what she's also saying, y'all, is like to look at like, who are the other people who know your people, right? And social workers also spend oftentimes more time with people and they know like the major pain points that often go deeper than kind of like the medical stuff, right? They know what the actual challenges are in many cases and like the challenges that are really impacting day-to-day life versus health, right? And so I think that's one of the reasons why social workers are working out well for you in terms of referrals.
Well, and they're hugely helpful when it comes to resources. Oftentimes, and I work with one that happens to be in their own practice as well, but if you're in a skilled nursing facility, if they're in a hospital, they're the ones doing the discharge planning. So if they have your information, if they know that you're a resource, and that you might not be appropriate for them upon discharge from a hospital, we might need some care in between on that continuum spectrum, but they can give your information out. They can say, hey, this person is doing this. Another big way, a huge way we've participated in kind of word of mouth referrals is our participation in any of the community support groups. So on like a monthly basis, I speak at least at one support group. We have a really active Alzheimer's Alliance in our county and in surrounding counties. So, you know, I've gone in and chatted with the caregiver support group, the early onset support group. We have some local Parkinson's groups. We just actually started hosting our own Parkinson's support group in our area. We also just started hosting an ALS support group in our area because there isn't any. So not only is there a need, but it's hugely helpful in being like, hey, I have a question. I saw you're hosting a support group and my mom's husband's cousin just got diagnosed with Parkinson's. What do we do? Well, let's talk about it. Let's have him come in.
Yeah, because again, you're leading with education and now you're saying that you're also leading with support, right? And so if someone's, you know, in a let's just say a terrible situation where a loved one has been diagnosed with ALS or they have, right? You know, they're looking obviously for support, but they're also looking for additional care. And like in terms of trust, if you're providing the support group, then they're also going to trust you to have a conversation with you at least about, are you an appropriate person to then be their clinician, right?
Absolutely. And if not, you know, who can we recommend you to? I really have changed my mindset. And I know that you've said this forever. In my opinion, you know, I'm not in competition with anybody else. And I do think that a rising tide lifts all boats. So if we are saying, hey, you know, we happen to love our ALS community and we do specialize here and that. But if we didn't, I'm referring out. You know, I do feel comfortable enough in what our office can do and what the services we can provide. And I'm so proud of the level of service we do provide that if it's not our thing, I'm going to send it to someone else. And I think that, you know, as medical providers, again, our reminder is we're on a team and I'm going to do my part of that team. But if that's not my specialty, hey, let's go somewhere else, you know, and we built a network enough too, and it's taken several years. But now I do feel like we have a really good handle on resources. You know, if it's out of my scope or if it's not my specialty, again, I'm going to always treat someone like they're my mom or my sister. I would want that care. I know that people want that care themselves. So I think when you lead that way, you know, one, you get lovely patients. And two, you get lovely professionals. You get other people in your network who are also looking out for you the way you're looking out for them.
Totally. And like the whole thing too is like to become the one. I always talk about becoming the one too. It's like you want to become the one who, when physicians, you know, have a new client, let's say with early onset dementia, they're like, oh, you have to go see Megan, right? Like,
yeah,
like a social worker, same thing. It's like you want to become the one that is known for a thing, right? Because, you know, listeners, everybody wants word of mouth marketing. But in order to get word of mouth referrals, you have to give something, like people something to talk about, right?
100%. And you kind of have to not stop talking about it.
Right. So that's actually my next question is, for people who are listening to this, who are like, wow, this Megan, she sounds incredible. But also like, I'm a little shy or like, I'm a little worried about like putting myself out there. Like, what would you say to people who might have that fear?
Well, you know, I think practice is helpful. And I think I go into almost everything I do at this point. I'm going to ask with genuine interest and genuine care. But if I hear no, hey, I hear no. I have heard no. And honestly, sometimes not even no, but just disinterest. I have, you know, spoken to physician after physician after physician. Hey, my name is Megan. This is what I do. This is who we help. This is how we can help your patient. They say, okay. And you know what? That is fine. I really am in a point now where I have no shame. If I get a yes, if I get a sounds great, you know, it's going to make my day. But if I get a no, it's just another day I heard a no. And I think it's important because again, you know, I can't stress how I never thought I would be a salesperson, but those physicians or those, you know, other individuals in the medical professional are seeing salesmen all day long. They've got drug reps coming in. They've got home health reps coming in. They've got, you know, different facility reps. They see a salesperson all day long. So I also will stress as much as I can, look, I'm not a salesperson, even though I'm definitely selling you. I'm a provider. I'm the person who sees your patient every week. I'm also the one who can help you make sure as soon as something unusual happens, as soon as we're seeing some kind of decline, we're getting them back in your office. Our goal is always maintaining our quality of life and preventing functional change to the best of our ability within the realm of realistic possibilities. So again, I hear no constantly. I have heard millions of no's. You've just got to tell yourself, you've got to establish your own script that says this no doesn't make me any less of a person. It doesn't change how good I am at my job. And it doesn't change what I have to offer. It just doesn't.
Well, and you can't let that slow you down, right? And the other thing is, like, listeners, I'm sure you can hear in Megan's voice how passionate she is about her clients and how deeply she cares about the clients and family members that you work with, right? So listeners, think about yourself. Like, do you care deeply about autistic kids or kids with feeding challenges or adults with mild traumatic brain injury or, you know, lymphedema, whoever you care deeply about, and say, like, you know, is it worth it to put myself out there on behalf of my clients? Because that's why I'm doing this. And so sometimes when people get stopped by imposter syndrome or shyness or fear of rejection or all those kind of things, like, you kind of have to take yourself out of the equation and say, listen, I'm not kind of doing this for me. I mean, I am a little bit because I have a business, but I'm not doing this for me. Like, I'm doing this for my clients. And I think that mindset shift could help you get out of your house and get into some of these offices and be a little bit less afraid. Because again, it's you're doing it for the clients, not necessarily you.
And I mean, I couldn't agree with all of that more. And I just had this conversation with a patient earlier, actually. When we're trying something new, when we're doing something, and especially when it involves us communicating with other professionals who, again, we think we, you know, maybe they know more than us or I'm not worth their time. They speak to so many people all day long, every day. Even if you call and fumble through a call, you know, we can't get our words out. Or if you fumble through a meeting with a physician, not the worst thing they're going to see that day. It's probably not the worst thing they're going to see, you know, in the next 10 minutes. So the fear of failure, or the fear of being concerned, you get better and better the more you practice. You know, and we talk about compensatory strategies all the time. For a while, I did have a script. You know, I just call and say, hey, this is what we're doing. This is where we're at. You know, for a while before I knew my business phone number, I'd write that down and have it next to me if I made a phone call. Again, I think the idea that the more you hear no, the less it starts to mean. This no is not getting in the way of my success. This no is not stopping me from serving my patient population. I also think our medical system, whether you're pediatric, adult, somewhere in between, it's a hard time to be sick in our medical system. And I will always think to myself, I am happy to advocate all day long because I know that some of my patients cannot. I'm happy to be a pain in someone else's behind to better the care somebody is going to get. And if that makes somebody a little bit frustrated or mad, that does not change how I run my business. You know, we're putting our patients first. And if I have to call a nurse 5 or 6 times, you know, that's what we're going to do. And again, I think no matter what, the more you do it, the easier it gets. It's just hearing this first like 10, 15 no's. Or, you know, again, the dismissal. It's not even sometimes a hard no. It's like, oh, I went in, I talked to this physician. They said, you know, they like what they have to hear. And then you get back to your office and you don't get a referral. Does not mean that they don't recommend or recognize you. It may also just mean, again, they haven't used you before. Why would they use you now? Right. You know, just hearing something once doesn't change what's going to happen.
Well, also, like, a no doesn't mean not ever. A no yes. could be no, not right now, right? Like, sometimes people, I hear this all the time in some of my groups. They say, you know, oh man, like, referrals are down, like, whatever. And I'm like, hey, it's the week before Christmas. Like, yep. I'm not entirely sure what you expect, but like, this is not going to be a season where you're going to get an onslaught of interest because people are distracted, right? Something else, Megan, that I think is like so important for any listeners who are like, yeah, but I still like aren't really, I'm not good at selling myself and like whatever else. But Megan used a different word that I want you all to all think about, which is advocacy. So you're not selling yourself. You're not selling your practice. You are advocating for your client. So if you can try to shift your mindset, but from, you know, not that selling is a bad thing, but like for anyone who's like opposed to that, right? You could say like, okay, I'm not selling, I'm advocating for my clients. And that might help you, again, get out of your house, get on the phone, get into an office, get into conversations that otherwise you may be hesitant to do.
Oh, totally.
Hi there, Jenna Castor-Casbon here, and I hope that you're loving the episode so far. Chances are you've been listening to this podcast for a while and soaking up a ton of information from myself and our guests, and it's time to make the shift from dreaming to doing and go from inspiration to implementation. Successful private practices don't build themselves. At The Independent Clinician, we help regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners using our proven systems. No more guessing, no more Googling, no more sleepless nights stressing about legalities. We can help you just like we've helped the guests featured on this show. They didn't guess or stress their way through private practice. Instead, they got step-by-step help along the way, and we're excited to help you too. If you need help to get set up and started with private clients on the side, the Start Your Private Practice program is perfect for you. If you've already started and you want to transition into full-time private practice and be successful once you're there, the Grow Your Private Practice program is your next step. To learn more about our programs, go to independentclinician.com. Now back to the episode.
It was kind of a wall for me or a burden initially, being like, okay, you know, let me get out there. But I think you also hit on something incredible. And I'm not sure how often, you know, we have the opportunity to go behind the scenes in a physician's office, but talk about distracted. Your message may have absolutely hit home with your physician or whichever medical professional you've just chatted with, but they've turned a corner. They've been handed four different charts. This patient's late. There's an emergency over here. They are also just distracted. So I do think there's something to be said about the importance of how often you're bugging those physicians. One time's not going to make a difference. I mean, maybe a physician's lovely, or that their next patient is somebody who needs you. But if that doesn't happen, we got to go in again next month, or we got to drop off some stuff again. And I've had hit and miss with physical paper. You know, I've got every brochure you could ever make. You know, I've got, you know, the quick reads. I do think the more I can personally get in front of someone, the more success I have. And that may just be, you know, who I'm working with or who I'm with. Because again, they get handed a paper by six other drug reps that day, or, you know, they were handed samples by someone else. They are getting sold all day long. Our difference is we're the provider. Our difference is we are actively making a difference with your person next week, or, you know, whenever we can get them in. So the more we can get in front of that physician, the more they finally go, yes, that girl that will not leave me alone, but is doing good work.
I think sometimes people admire persistence. But at the same time, like it's about being like, no, this friend cares so much about her ALS clients or her, you know, Parkinson's people or whatever, right? But the other thing you said way earlier in the conversation that I just want to bring back is like how important it is to make sure that physicians and, you know, referral coordinators and whatever else know when to refer, right? Like it is nothing at all when talking to physicians or specialists. You say when, you know, I think that the term red flags is now people don't like that as much anymore. But nonetheless, the whole concept of it is like you say when someone is, you know, coughing during meals, when they are doing this, when they're doing that, like don't wait, right? That is exactly when you refer, so that when then a client is in front of them and they're saying, or their wife is saying, oh yeah, you know, he's not really, he's clearing his throat, whatever. Then like the light bulb goes off and they're like, oh, wait a minute. That woman who was in here yesterday. Yeah. Megan, let me, you know, right. Like that's when it happens. So like, so don't talk quite as much necessarily about like, you know, all of your background or like all of these different things. It's like, no, cut to the chase. This 100%. Is exactly when to refer to me.
Absolutely. My name is Megan. We treat the patients. We treat the Parkinson's population. We treat the dementia population. If somebody's having a hard time eating or drinking, if we've seen weight loss, if we've seen pneumonia, and then the cognition stuff, you know, is kind of clearly short. I used to, when I first started, it's like, how many medical terms can I include in this spiel? Nope. Simple, short, sweet. And again, I will often lead always. If we have enough symptoms to have a diagnosis, the second we get that diagnosis, you're coming to us for this, this, and this. I don't need to wait. We don't need to wait until something gets so bad we can no longer ignore it. And that's kind of the elevator pitch they get. Send them our way. Let's preserve and maintain quality of life. Let's not wait for functional decline.
That.
Please stop muttering me. I'll send you a patient if you don't come back to this office. Just kidding. But
like that's the kind of thing again that like that listeners, I mean, that felt like a mic drop moment for me, right? And so like you want to be able to have, again, make sure that they know exactly what populations you see and when to refer. Like,
don't. And how.
And how. Correct. Yes. Because
I'll say this for, you know, I'm sure it's the same with our pediatric. I just am so, you know, self-involved in the adult and aging populations. I can't get out of my way. But we have two major systems here that my practice is not affiliated with. So you know, my in initially was all of these standalone practices as well, you know, a neuro not affiliated, PCP who's not affiliated. And COVID made it difficult to get in physically to the big hospital systems. But now at this point, I also just call those guys up. You know, I'm like, hey, we offer this program, this specialized treatment, and this specialized treatment that's not offered anywhere else. Send us your patients. Because they're going to get to us eventually. It's how long it takes for them to get to us. And then it's with a neuroprogressive degenerative diagnosis, how much time are we taking from the patient? Because they don't have time to spare. Right. So for a long time, I was very intimidated by the major hospital systems because they should be referring within their system. Well, turns out after bothering everyone for several years, they're not even referring within their system. And those SLPs within those systems are just doing their job, right? They're just going home. They're doing work. They're doing great work, but they're not bothering physicians about their scope of practice or what they should be doing. And they have tons of turnover because they can't support them. So within those two major systems, they're not utilizing us as a scope of practice. Yeah. Well, for a while, I was like, well, I don't want to take business. You know, I don't want to ruffle feathers. I'm not ruffling feathers. I'm helping patients. That's where we're at. You know, that's all I care about at this point. And again, respectfully, I'm not trying to, you know, take anybody's stuff, but let's just help who we're going to help. And it doesn't matter what system you're in. They can refer out to us, no problem. And they do.
Well, right. Because what you're saying is true for lots of populations, but time is important. Right.
It
and
is.
So like, when people are on wait lists or going to services, like that time is crucial, whether you have a neurodegenerative issue, right? Or, physical issues that are going to get worse or not get better, or got a child who has either medical issues or non-medical issues like, you know, autism or whatever else. Like people don't
Absolutely.
Have time to wait.
No.
And like the other takeaway that I'm hearing from you too is, so we have another person. So Katie Brown, many of you know Katie. She's a mentor.
She's
for
my favorite.
She's everyone's favorite. Everyone loves Katie. Neurospeech Solutions is her her Instagram handle. She's a mentor for the Start and Grow programs. But she lives in Buffalo, New York. And same thing. There are two major medical centers. And her practice, like they keep hiring. And she is a listener. She is an adult-focused private practice. She's amazing, but she has to keep hiring more and more clinicians to keep up with demand. So same thing as what Megan's saying is, listen, even though there are other facilities in this area that in theory should have like a stronghold on the clients, like
they don't,
and there's plenty of space for you. And so if you especially are an adult focused person and you're being intimidated by major hospitals, medical centers, other like things, like don't let that stop you because you know that there are clients who are going without services and you can help them.
Absolutely. 1,000%. And when I finally did start bugging people in those systems, one of the big things was a wait list. So that's a great point. We hired our first speech pathologist. She's actually a CF, which I love, in August of this year. And we will have to hire again next year. But my thing is always, we will never have a wait list. You know, if a patient has Medicare, I can get them in, you know, next week. If we have another insurance where I need to do a couple things in between, probably be 2 weeks, but only because of insurance. And I think that's a huge selling point. I really do. I have had, you know, the physician interactions I have had, and I always ask, I will circle back on this a little bit because it was never something I did until I started speaking to professional salespeople. They will look at a physician and they will say something to the effect of, is there any reason you wouldn't refer to us? And at first I was so kind of icked out by that phrase, like, oh, yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot. And I'm pretty forward to start. I have very little shame going in, but I think, okay. And I got this actually from several drug reps who were like, try it. I'm like, okay, well, why not? And so on several occasions I've said hey, is there any reason you wouldn't refer to us? And several have said, well, what about insurance or what about a wait list? Which I can then answer immediately. But had I not asked that, I wouldn't have answered their question. I wouldn't, you know, they would have been left wondering, or, you know, again, as I go in there, is this like 5'2" kind of blonde girl bugging the heck out of people? You know, they may have just dismissed me further. No, I have all the answers. You know, I'm not just here as a patient advocate. I can do all the other stuff because I've had to learn it. But I think the wait list aspect is huge. I have had multiple physicians go, okay, that makes a difference because our two major hospital systems have solid wait lists. You know, we can do the eval, but we can't treat you for the next, you know, 4 or 6 weeks. I don't want to wait. And they shouldn't have to. And again, it's the hospital's fault. They have to wait anyways. We're understaffed or we're not staffing appropriately. It's not that speech therapist's fault. But I can solve that problem, and we have. So it makes a pretty lovely difference for those physicians where that's a priority for them.
The other takeaway that I'm having that listeners, I hope that you are too, is like how Megan is talking about her practice and what she's doing to build it. Like, can you hear that she has shifted from being just a clinician with a private practice to like a business owner, right? Like Megan is thinking and acting like a business owner at this point, right? Not like air quotes, just a clinician or like, I hear this all the time. Like, oh, well, I just have a small practice or like, I'm just a speech therapist or whatever else. Like she has made that transition to having the identity of practice owner, right? And because like now your family's income, I would imagine, is dependent on your practice too. Like that's also sometimes where that shift happens. When people first start their private practices on the side, a lot of times the money is nice. It's supplemental. It's fun. It feels kind of like free money and it's kind of exciting, right? But like once your practice starts to grow and your family becomes dependent on that income, there has to be a shift from clinician to CEO. And if there's not, you and your practice are going to be in trouble long-term.
I completely agree. And I was that girl 3 years ago that was like, I have a small private practice. And I think, honest to God, I'd love to give Katie credit for this. I think it was her who was like, stop saying that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the size of my practice because my impact on each patient is substantial most of the time. You know, but we're doing our good work. We are making a difference, whether you're seeing one patient or, you know, 20, or, you know, at this point, I think we're doing about 70 visits a week, which is easy and nice, functional for us at the moment, but it's a lot of patients. So you just say, I have a private practice. I own a private practice. I say that. And also, I love watching people's faces go, oh, what? Yeah, I do. I actually do. This is great. Because you do, you know, and especially, and I'm going to plug, because I do love Katie. Katie's Medicare class was hugely helpful. I was already accredited and in network, but from a billing perspective, very helpful. She's fabulous. I recommend it.
It's Medicare for SLPs for anyone who's interested.
It's amazing. And again, I was already billing Medicare and I was already in network with Medicare when I bought that class. Wonderful. But that being said, as the practice owner, it is incremental. We start going, yep. And again, if you want to hire, something I'm super passionate about as well is I love it when I get a graduate student or we've hired a clinical fellow. I love perpetuating clinical growth and problem solving. It warms my heart. I love the teacher aspect of that. And so I've thought about that as my business as well. What is the overall impact of this practice? You know, we have a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan. And if you're not there in your own practice right now, that's okay. Again, 6 years ago, you could not have bit me. I would be here. I do think the more you go, okay, what's our overall impact? Because I am the business owner. The second you become responsible for someone else's income as well, that was a big game changer for me. Because when we hired, they were immediately full-time. I passed my caseload to that person. I went out and marketed again and rebuilt my own caseload and perpetuated increased referrals on a weekly basis. But all of a sudden it was like, oh shoot, that girl is working here full time. I am responsible for not only maintaining a lovely work environment for her where we can do good work, but heck, she's got to pay for like her house and her car. You know, we've got to keep that going. And that was, I think, not that I didn't know I was going to do that when I hired, but that was a different ballgame for me where it's like, okay, I do want to be responsible for these people. I do want to be responsible as a member of this community, as a business owner as well. You know, I'm involved in a couple outside groups where I am there as a business owner. You know, like I'm a part of that group because I own a business rather than me being the speech therapist that's just bugging everybody. So I think as you can do that as well, you know, depending on your time commitment or what your life looks like, you know, go to a Chamber of Commerce meeting. Go reach out to the local PT or whoever, even if it's at a small capacity, because that kind of helps you build up that ownership mentality. You know, I am outside of my scope of practice. I'm not talking about articulation or autism or behavioral therapy or dysphagia or Parkinson's. I'm talking about my business. And that was a big shift for me, certainly early on.
Yeah. Guys, remember back at the beginning of the conversation, Megan has 2 little kids.
Yes.
So for those
hot-wording diapers.
Right, exactly. They're little, right? And so like most people also may be thinking like, oh, like but I'm too busy. I have little kids. Like a quote that I want to say to everyone and to Megan also that like really stuck with me. I was in a business coaching program years ago, and I was kind of making some excuses because I had kids. I was like, well, I can't really do that. I have kids, whatever. And the person just looked at me and she said, Jenna, you can either let your kids be the excuse or the reason. And I was like knife to heart, right? And that affected me so much. So now I share that quote because it was very powerful for me. But Megan, can you talk a little bit about what it's like to like have this practice and also have like two little kids?
Yes. And I've got to give a big shout out to my mom. My mom was the most impressive. She still is an incredibly impressive working mom. And so I can remember looking back, going to, you know, my mom's office. And so there, as soon as I kind of embarked on this and we had our first planned blessing, I was like, you know, he's going to see my office. We're going to go build those desks and he's going to come in and see mom and dad working on something, you know, that matters to me. And then we had our second surprise blessing. And don't get me wrong, I do feel like where I'm at right now, I utilize the spoon theory pretty often with my patient population, which is a way to manage cognitive fatigue and functional energy. And I will tell you, I have been more rested in my life outside of this specific time frame. There are certainly challenges. However, you know, if we're going to throw a fun phrase in as well, the only way is through, right? And I can do it where I do it well. And some days I will say, like, done is better than perfect. We're getting it done. I'm moving on to the next thing. But at the end of the day, I am building this for my kids, certainly. And so I can be present with my kids. I can tell you right now, I am less present. You know, my husband is fantastic. I'm blessed with a super lovely partner. So he gets our kids from daycare right now. And we would not exist without daycare. So God bless daycare. But the idea is that by the time my kids are 5 and 4, I am doing most of the sports pickups. I am able to be super present with what my kids are doing and what I want to do. You know, the goal long term is, in my opinion, incredibly, incredibly valuable and certainly worth the work I'm putting in right now. You know, this is a long term plan. This is, hey, we're in it to win it for a really long time. So I love that both my kids have been up to my office and, you know, we talk about mommy's office and we go all about, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. It is a difficult time, but I think every day of the week, it's worth it. And again, I think we're putting one foot in front of the other and every day isn't super, but every day is progress, whether it's huge or just, you know, a centimeter, millimeter. Yeah, that was also, again, something I think COVID taught me initially. And then certainly having two children, 14 months apart, is pivoting. You know, like this was not the initial plan growth-wise. I would have loved to have hired a year ago. Just wasn't where I was at. It wasn't what I could do. So, you know, we got a handle on stuff a little bit better. And, you know, the business plan, again, at the end of the day is the same, but lots of little pivots in between. You know, okay, well, this has happened. What can we do here instead of, you know, what the initial plan was? How can we alter a little bit today's plan and tomorrow's plan so we still get to the plan from 5 or 10 years from now?
Yes. Oh, I love that you're thinking strategically, but also really thinking about like the short term, right? But like listeners, especially those of you with kids, like another person who's been part of my programs, her name's Kristen Beasley. She has a practice in Arizona. And, you know, she made a very intentional decision with her family. She had 3 little girls and, you know, a husband. And she literally sat down with them and said, listen, mom's going to be busy for the next year or two. So that I can be less busy and more present like over time, right? And so for people who are hesitant to enter a busy season of life, which I totally understand and respect, I think that you kind of have to think long term about it and not just short term about it, right? The things that Megan is doing, the things that Kristen did, the things that other members of my programs have done is to be intentional about time and to literally invest time and money into something now that will literally pay dividends later because you set it up this way, right? And so if you're thinking about this, like, don't delay. Don't wait 5 years to get started. Imagine, Megan, where you're going to be 5 years from now.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's your term, but I've stolen it for years. Analysis paralysis is super real, but just go one foot in front of the other. Because like you said, I will be a totally different business owner and clinician in 2 more years. Again, had I not had 2 lovely surprises, we'd be somewhere else. The life happens too. But like you said, do it now. It is a busy season. It is But it's not avoidable if this is your goal still and we start in another 5 years. It's just a different time of your busy season. So I couldn't encourage someone enough to make the move. It is life-changing for your patients. You're doing good work. You're making a difference. Let's have you benefit from that in a way you didn't think you could previously.
Totally. I love your energy, Megan. Like, you know, again, I've now known you for a couple of years, but to really hear like the full backstory and to hear like what you're doing with and for your clients or patients and, you know, your plans for the future. I'm hoping that people, and then as well, sorry, is like some really specific suggestions about like marketing medical based practices, right? I'm sure that our listeners are like forever in your debt and grateful for this information too. I think that sometimes people like need to be like, oh, like I can call doctors back again if they said no, like, but they said no.
Call them and bother them. Yes. And again, I think that's hard.
If you look at the practices that are doing well versus like, so I talk a lot about like successful versus struggling practices, right?
Yeah.
Like look at the practices that are like still on the struggle bus, even if it's been months, years, decades, often people who are unwilling to do these things, right? And the people who are willing to put themselves out there repeatedly and in different ways are the ones whose practices are growing. So people tell me all the time, like, well, how are some of your students doing so well? And like, mine is sucking. And I'm like, well, look at what they're posting. Like every couple of days they're posting, I had a meeting with a doctor. I did this. Like, I don't mean to sound like an asshole, but like, what are you doing?
Well, like, let's go. Because again, that one no really doesn't mean anything. And I think that is a, once you pass that concept, it's a game changer. That no is not a forever, not an on purpose. They're just busy. They're distracted. You know, they're thinking about their kid doing something stupid at school yesterday or whatever it may be. They're also a human. Their no is not all encompassing. Their no is just today.
But like people need to get to that, right? So thank you for just also being an example of someone who's like, and even talking about like the sales reps and stuff, right? Like people in our profession, I think, have this like negative view of sales. You know, there's different skills that you learn as a business owner, right? And like clinical skills are something that we all pretty much like have a lockdown on. Like we're all really good at clinical skills, right? But like some people, frankly, don't advance past that, right? Because they're like unwilling to invest like time or money into learning business skills. And like
when you own a business,
if you don't invest time and money in business skills, your business is not going to grow. And like, I don't know how to say that in different ways that like stick with people. So many people are just like, oh, I'm going to keep doing more CEUs and more CEUs. And like, yes, you have to provide good clinical care. Like that's a given. But like running a business is not just about clinical care.
Right. No. And care doesn't get someone in the door.
No.
You know, don't get me wrong. It'll keep people in the door, but it does not get someone to your door. It is the, you know, again, it's either the team that you can make yourself a part of, squeeze in and bully into, or it's, again, the physicians. You have to understand how important we are, and telling anybody one thing once is never going to do it. So I do live, my sister and I used to call it, you know, like no shave November. We just used to say no shame November, and we would just go out. And I'm lucky she works in sales at Google. So I'm always like, okay. But the drug reps were actually, I worked very closely with a licensed professional counselor and social worker who specializes in the aging population and caregivers. And she was a drug rep for a long time. So she's like, nope, you got to go back in. You got to go back in. You got to ask them this. But I don't have any shame. So sure, this is my business. I'm responsible for other people. Again, I just am so proud of what our scope of practice does.
Okay, I'm just going to back up and say this, right? You recognized that something you were doing wasn't working.
Totally.
Working as well as you wanted it to, right? And so you said, okay, who can I learn from? Oh, that's interesting. The drug reps seem to be having like more success with this and they aren't feeling ashamed of this and they are getting referrals and whatever else. So maybe, just maybe, I should try some things that they're doing and see if it works for me. And guess what? It worked.
And if not, it's not working. You know, again, the consequence to adding their suggestions was in no way, shape, or form harmful. Didn't affect me negatively, and it got me sometimes additional information. So again, I think CEUs are valuable. I love CEUs, but I do think there's a ton of value in figuring out how to be a salesman and how to be a business owner.
And I know that you're doing that with your career program because it is a different ballgame.
And people are just need to understand that, right? So yeah, if I was teaching people how to become better clinicians, right? And there's lots of people who do that, right? Jesse Ginsburg is one of my friends, right? She does a lot with helping, you know, autistic kids and, you know, the sensory issues and all this kind of stuff, like in communication. And that's awesome, right? And that's great. Again, become a really good clinician. But if you also are going to run a business, you have to become a really good business owner.
Totally. There is no in between. And again, I couldn't pride myself more on my clinical expertise, if I'm honest. Like, I know we didn't touch on that intent. I'm super proud how the quality of our care is. It makes a difference. Again, we specialize in like a couple very specific things. There's nothing that brings me more joy than like a head and neck cancer patient that's been NPO for 2 years, has seen 3 speech therapists, and we get them fully eating and drinking and a head tube removed. I love it. But it's not the business aspect of it. Now, again, they're going to go home, but if they're a niche enough business, you know, we hope that there aren't a million head and neck cancer patients all of a sudden randomly coming into my office. But
it's the joy of running a business.
Yes. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, come visit us at our website or social media. We're certainly on Instagram and Facebook. I was not creative and incredibly literal. So our business name, speech, swallowing, and neurological rehabilitation. Or we go for SSNRTX.com. So come find us and hang out. But this was such a pleasure. I am constantly impressed by all of the people in your groups doing really good things and making a true functional impact. I love our scope of practice. I'm really proud of your community.
Well, thank you. And I'm really proud of, you know, the people that I've gotten to know, right? Well, you know, students in my programs, you know, other private practitioners and listeners, like you can be part of this. Like if you can't tell again from Megan, like the energy is growing, like the private practice movement is growing. And we know that psychologists, for example, have been in private practice for a long time, right? And you mentioned social workers too. Social workers and other mental health providers have been enjoying the benefits of private practice for a long time. And so I also see this as something that can really elevate our profession, as well as frankly elevating your life in terms of having more of those F words that I talk about, the freedom, flexibility, fulfillment, and finances. Like you can have that through private practice. So Megan, thank you again so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. This was awesome. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Don't you just love Megan? I love her drive and I love how passionate she is about her population and how that's translated into her ability to market her services. I also love how she talked about the importance of developing business skills just as much as clinical skills when it comes to a private practice. She is a perfect example of someone who turned her clinical interests into a thriving business, where she has full control over which population she works with. If you would like to learn more about our programs and how we support SLPs and OTs just like Megan and how we can support you too, please visit independentclinician.com. As always, thank you for listening and please tune in next week for another episode of the Private Practice Success Stories podcast. Till then.
Well, this episode might be over, but we don't have to say goodbye. Head on over to independentclinician.com for resources that will help you at each stage of your private practice journey. If you're on Instagram, let's connect. Follow me and send me a DM. I'm at Independent Clinician. And if you're on Facebook, make sure that you join the SLP and OT Private Practice Beginners Facebook group. All right, off to help more regular SLPs and OTs become successful private practitioners. Let me know if I can help you too.